Thanks for listening to The Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for The Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. It's hour two on a Monday, flying by. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, right here on FS1. It's great to be here. You know, it's interesting. Joy Taylor is joining me. That, you know, COVID has been difficult for all the leagues. I thought the NBA handled it, and hockey, brilliantly. Baseball had some early stumbles, but I thought had a great postseason. College football has predictably, it's just college campuses with young men making poor decisions on mask wearing is not built for COVID, right? Even though the numbers will tell you that's one of the safer groups of people, it's just not great. But the NFL's gotten an interesting break. As COVID jams us into our house, and the NBA season hasn't started yet, and baseball's over, and college football isn't as dynamic as most years, they're staggering this schedule, and it's frankly, this looks like the best week of the year. I get Sunday's great. I get two games tonight. I get the Cowboys-Ravens tomorrow, and then I get Thursday, I get a Rams-New England game. I don't mean to be selfish, but as a sportscaster, I would take this every year. I always feel like on a Sunday, Joy, I can't watch. I mean, I do. I sit and watch with my TVs. I try to watch it. And I pick one or two games a week, usually Jags games. I'm not going to watch it. But like this year, when you stagger it, I can watch every single game to some level. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, and these reschedules have not even been planned. Like they didn't even plan for these games to be independent. They've had to adjust to COVID situations. And yeah, I mean, for the fan, it's great. What else is going on a Tuesday night? You've binged everything already.
Yeah.
Like it's perfect.
It really is. All right. We call it calling right, calling wrong. I make mistakes during the week. Some I have strong opinions. They go either way. And here we go on a Monday.
Where Colin was right.
It's been a roller coaster, ridiculous year for Blazing 5, and this was a great week. Almost went 4-0 yesterday, went 3-1, had the Browns to cover, had the Rams to win, had New England to beat the Chargers. And, oh, by the way, I thought I had a backdoor cover on Philadelphia until Aaron Jones went Aaron Jones. Have the Niners tonight. I'm 30-32-2 on the year. Let's keep it going.
Where Colin was wrong.
I didn't know if Matt LaFleur was the answer in Green Bay. He'd been a coordinator for 1 year. My sources told me he sometimes struggled to own the room. Tennessee's offense got better when he left, but you know what? Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur are 22-6 together. I thought last year he was very good on the play sheet, but didn't adjust at half. This year, Green Bay's a better, not great, but a better second half team. Aaron is happy. He's crazy productive. The eye rolls are gone. He seems fully engaged. And it works. I mean, now, they are sometimes Davante Adams dominant, but I've got to be honest with you. I'm not so sure he's not the first or second best skill player in the league. So, we always criticize coaches when, why don't you go to the number one guy? Well, they go to the number one guy a lot. They go to Aaron Jones and Davante Adams a lot. And that's what you have to do when you have great players. So I think Matt LaFleur has surprised me and been better than expected.
Where Colin was right.
Well, I said the Belichick-Anthony Lynn game yesterday had the makings of the biggest coaching mismatch of the year in the NFL. It's nothing against Anthony Lynn, but this was embarrassing. It was a New England toyed with a Chargers staff, special teams coach, defensive coaches, offensive coordinator. 45-0 with Justin Herbert and those weapons. By the way, I've been on this for a month. I've said, listen, I know Anthony. I like him. The players play hard for him. But there are losses and there are moments when you get one of these all-time potential great quarterbacks, you got to get the coach right. No more coordinators. You got to go spend some money on a head coach. By the way, the last two times Belichick faced Anthony Lynn, 45-0 New England and 41-28. And that game was 41-14 at one point as a coaching mismatch.
Where Colin was wrong.
I've always had this thing where if your owner's an A, your GM's an A, your coach is an A, and your quarterback's an A, or they're all close, you're a Super Bowl contender every year. I've been so high on Philadelphia for 3 years. They're bad at everything. I mean, they're a mess right now. They have some good defensive personnel, but it's a mess. The Carson Wentz thing is a mess. Alshon Jeffries is shot and overpaid. For some reason, nobody's ever healthy. Their first and second round picks had a good... They showed signs yesterday, but don't look as dynamic as you'd want a first or a second round kind of franchise to be. And I gotta own it. And Philadelphia right now is bleak. Doug Peterson, I don't know if that's the right coach. Listen, Belichick loses coordinators. Andy Reid loses them every 2 years. It's not man overboard. Doug Peterson lost one guy he really connected with, Frank Reich, and they can't get it right since he left. It may be the wrong head coach.
Where Colin was right?
We called it when the Giants were 1-7. We said it's the best 1-7 team ever. We said this is the Miami Dolphins, guys. Keep your eye on the New York Giants. And we called this when they were 1-7. 5 of their 7 losses have been one possession. They now lead their division. And I don't see anybody that can really threaten them, to be honest with you. Seattle's offensive line was overmatched. This is a franchise. This is Miami of last year. They got into a big hole. Remember, Miami was like 0-7 or 0-8 last year. But when you were watching them, you were seeing a team that was losing competitive, baby steps. Then at the end of the year, Miami started winning narrowly. This is what the Giants are doing. Blowout early, losses are close, wins are close. This team's not that far away from some blowout W's next year. So we were right on Joe Judge.
Where Colin was wrong.
Kyler Murray is a Hail Mary pass. One Hail Mary pass from a 5-game losing streak. And I always said with Kyler, even if he doesn't run, he throws the prettiest ball in the league. He can be a pocket quarterback. What it looks like is running is really essential to his game. He only has one win this year where he didn't rush for 60 yards. He really does, and that's okay because he can do it, but Kyler needs the running element to work. I think he throws such a beautiful, and he made a couple of great throws yesterday, one in the end zone to DeAndre Hopkins, which was a complete needle thread. But he needs to run. He can be kind of inconsistent, and he still makes mistakes. Yesterday, 21-39, not great.
Where Colin was right?
I said Westbrook and Harden would never work. And people say, oh, they're close friends. And I'm like, I'm going to speak for guys on this. Guys don't care. If we're great friends and you're screwing my career, we're not great friends. I'm not going to speak for Will. I'm going to speak for guys. Listen, they're hard to play with, and they're both ball-centric. And Daryl Morey and a lot of people were like, oh, they're friends. They get along. It's like the games don't work. And as Chris Broussard taught me a long time ago, your game's your game. Your game's your game. Ben Simmons can't shoot. That's his game. So you got to figure out a way to work around Ben Simmons. And Westbrook is athletic, and he's fun, and he's amazing, and he's talented, and nobody plays harder, and he has a lot of redeemable qualities. I wouldn't build my franchise around him, but you're being intellectually dishonest to say Westbrook's not a first belt Hall of Famer, and he's not fun, and there's not assets. Nobody plays harder. But he and Harden were never going to work. It was a dumb argument.
Where Colin was wrong.
The Belichick coaching tree appears to be blooming. It ain't a redwood. It ain't Andy Reid. But I think I tried to uproot the tree a little fast. Joe Judge appears to be great. Brian Flores is really good. And by the way, he gets a little credit for Mike Vrabel. I don't know how much, but he gets some. But there are three coaches. Vrabel had a bad first half yesterday, but Vrabel can coach. Brian Flores is a coaching rock star. And Joe Judge, I mean, I'm sorry, man. When you go 0-5 and your team plays hard every play, you can lose Dave Wannstedt always says, you can lose games, don't lose a locker room. Joe Judge went 0-5, and some of those losses were pathetic. He never lost that locker room for a second. So the Belichick coaching tree is it's still blooming.
Where Colin was right.
Last week, BYU fans and college football media, how can you put BYU behind 2-loss Georgia? BYU's undefeated. Yeah, BYU lost to something called Coastal Carolina. Their mascot is it the Chanticleers? I don't know what a Chanticleer is. Listen, BYU would get rolled by any of the top 4 or 5 SEC teams. College football is decided in early February on National Letter of Intent Day. It's nothing against Coastal Carolina, but they ran for 280 yards and ran all over BYU, physically pushed them around. Can we stop with this nonsense argument from college football media? How can a 2-loss, 3-loss SEC team be rated over an undefeated blank team? Because they got more good players. Just watch National Letter of Intent Day in early February. It usually happens right before, right after the Super Bowl. And look at all the good high school players. They're all going south, or most of them, right? So, like, I'm overhearing that dumb argument. You're smarter than the argument if you're making the argument that a 2-loss Georgia team, who, by the way, has lost to Bama in Florida. You watch Bama in Florida this year? Great coaches, great rosters, and really good football teams. It's called the Shank. What are they called? The
Chanticleers.
And that is a singing group in vaudeville back in the 30s. What is a chanticleer?
I think it is a singing group, actually. A musical ensemble?
It's a rooster.
It's a rooster?
It might also be a singing group, but it's a rooster. That's their logo.
That's a weird... are roosters big in the Carolinas? Or maybe they're big. I don't know. If they are, I still wouldn't
name think roosters are just...
annoying.
They're pretty, though.
Are they?
Do you even know which Carolina they're in?
No, I don't, honestly. What Carolina are they in? Which
they're in South Carolina.
Only two.
Okay. I'm being honest.
I don't know.
But, you know.
Dustin Johnson.
BYU was willing to take a game. I'd give you credit if you lost narrowly to Bama or LSU or Oklahoma.
I thought of you when I saw the end of that game. I was like, is this ready made for calling?
All right. Trent Dilfer's around the corner, Mike Vick too, on a Monday.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Tomorrow, it's a special edition of the NFL on Fox as Zeke and the Cowboys take on the Ravens. Coverage begins at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, also available on NFL Network and streaming on Prime Video.
Well, the Cowboys, we all know, were a mess, and then they had a bye, and then they came out of the bye, and much like the Patriots are going to do next week, and the Cowboys got it right. They lost to Pittsburgh close. They beat Minnesota. So it looks like Mike McCarthy needed that 2 weeks of practice. And so Dallas now looks like a tough out. So this, to me, what's the Fox bet line? This is a go-either-way game for me. This feels like a go-either-way game for me. And it didn't 4 or 5 weeks ago. What is the line right now today? I think Dallas has a fighter's chance tonight. I'll say that. I did not think that 4 weeks ago. But it's amazing. Tom Brady gets a bye this week. So can they find kind of their identity during the bye? When you get in the middle of the season, A, you get an extra 4 or 5 days rest, and then you get 4 or 5 isolated practices to work on the identity. You can change your team. What's the line tonight?
Tomorrow night it's 8.5.
Tomorrow's 8.5. I would take Dallas. I think Dallas a very good bet at 8.5. Trent Dilfer is now joining us. 15 years in the NFL, a Pro Bowl and a Super Bowl. The Bad News Lipscomb Academy, he's the head football coach, lost 35-28 in the state championship. So that is no good. Hopefully he's in a good mood today for us. Well, that's the first time I've talked to you as a losing coach in a long time. So, hey, Belichick's lost a couple Super Bowls, right? Happens.
It hurts, brother. It hurts. But I'm super proud of our boys. We didn't coach our best game, but our boys are fantastic. It's been quite a ride the last couple years, and we're very optimistic about the future.
So I said I don't like firing coaches midseason. But there are thresholds that you can lose the locker room. I think Greg Williams of the Jets loses a locker room if you don't fire him. I don't know what you do with Anthony Lynn now, but I do believe players are smart enough to go, we're not 45-0 bad in New England. We got whooped. In those situations, have you ever been a player on a team that you just knew your coach was so superior or inferior, it wasn't about the Jimmys and the Joes at some point?
Yeah, I felt that way when we were rolling in Tampa, 98, 99 with Tony Dungy. You know, we were just so well coached. Again, the Super Bowl year with Baltimore. There were times with Mike Holmgren where you just felt like you were superiorly coached than the team you were playing. You would watch them on film just like, hey, they don't have any idea what they're getting ready to do. You know, this was one of Belichick's better coaching performances. And I look at a few things. Their ability to create an identity now offensively with Cam Newton as their quarterback, to not panic when it wasn't pretty. There were some really ugly games there with Cam as the quarterback, with Stidham as the quarterback. It just didn't look right. But they've stuck to their plan to be a physical downhill run team, a little bit of an action team, creativity with trick plays, quarterback runs. Defensively, they've been pretty darn good all year long, and then special teams. It's kind of a passing statement in the NFL. I think in the high school game, the college game, people make a bigger deal out of special teams. It's truly a third of the game. In the NFL, it might be more than a third of the game sometimes, because a lot of times it reveals your identity as a football team. It reveals what you invest in the most in. It reveals how creative your staff is at trying to find a way to win a game that might be close or might be a tough one on the road. Their ability to create an identity, a physicality in the run game, stopping the run, and then being dominant on special teams. I mean, dominant on special teams shows that they're really turning over every page they possibly can to find ways of winning games. And they made this game laughable mainly because of special teams.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's I'm just going to lay it out there. Great first half, spotty second half. But do you look at Baker Mayfield a little differently this morning?
Well, we said this a while back, and I hate being the guy that says, hey, I told you so. But, you know, with Baker, it was pretty simple. They have the most snaps under center of any team in the NFL this year. Baker is most efficient under center. We've been saying this for weeks. And I think the staff is starting to realize his DNA. And you've been on this as well. He's not a great athlete. He's not – I think everybody had this picture of him as Oklahoma, that he was this – Johnny Manziel type quarterback, that he was best when he was being athletic and moving around and a playmaker. And really, when you study Baker, he's best on rhythm. He's best within structure. He's best in the play action game where you cut the field in half. He's actually pretty darn good. He has great eyes. He's very precise with the ball. He's got a large throw catalog. And that's what they've done. They've discovered his DNA. And they built an offense around Nick Chubb running the football downhill and then a really cool action game to go with it. And then they trusted him yesterday. They knew Tennessee wasn't going to allow a lot of first half run opportunities. So they trusted him in a very creative action game to lead with the pass, but not lead with the pass from four wide receivers and a spread set taking the ball out of the gun. They did it under center, flash faking the back, half rolls, full rolls, misdirection, throwbacks. They did a lot of this stuff that they've discovered he does well. If they can stick with this formula, Baker can be a really, really successful quarterback in this league. I just think this is as much coaching and developing young players we've seen in quite a while with the quarterback.
So we knew going into the league, I remember Pro Football Focus had Seattle's D-line rated bottom five and O-line bottom five. Well, it does appear with some acquisitions, Jamal Adams, Carlos Dunlap, they have solved the pass rush issue. They have a formidable pass rush, which we all know will help the secondary to some level. But then I watched that Giants game yesterday, and I'm like, man, it is hard to win a Super Bowl, Trent, when your quarterback is off platform and running. And I watched that Giant team, and I'm like, Giants are just pushing them around the field. Seattle's O-line can't do anything. And I thought to myself, is Seattle's O-line enough of a liability to keep them out of big games, the Super Bowl, a conference championship?
Yeah, I saw two things going on yesterday in that game. There's two really distinct stories going on. Number one, the Seahawks are not a Super Bowl team. I still think they're a really good football team, and I never bet against Russell Wilson. And they will fix some of these things, but they don't have the physicality on the offensive line to finish this race. It's just too frenetic. It puts too much burden on playmaking. And what you saw yesterday was Seahawks didn't make some plays they typically make. They dropped some big passes. Russell actually missed a few. He forced a few. It just puts such a burden on Russell and his skill guys to make up for their lack of physicality that you can't see that being sustained throughout a playoff run. They're a very good team. They have one of the best players in the world in Russell Wilson, but that lack of physicality up front is going to cost them. And then the second story going on is Joe Judge and what he's doing with the Giants. And again, going back, basically, I can just take all those comments I made about Bill Belichick and apply them to Joe Judge. The physicality, they have an identity. They're very physical defensively. Offensively, they stick to their game plan. They have an identity. It's very simple, and I don't think it's Super Bowl caliber down the road. They're going to have to evolve, but it's right for this team and then special teams. Here's a little secret thing you always got to look for as you're studying teams. Watch how teams cover kicks, not just return kicks, not how they play on special teams overall, but how they cover kicks. It's really a way of identifying a team's physicality. Watch the Giants cover punts and cover kickoffs. They are relentless. They are physical. They are fast. They're dominating at it. And what it means is that Joe Judge has gotten this team. Remember, these first 4 weeks of the season was preseason. These guys didn't have a preseason. So we really got to measure these teams from week five on. They have one of the top, they have five wins since week five. They're one of the more physical teams in football. They've had some signature wins. They've gotten themselves in the playoff mix, and they've done it through finding an identity of physicality, mental toughness, physical toughness. It's a great foundation to lay for the New York Giants that you can build a lot of sizzle on top of it in years to come.
So the Rams-Cardinals was a game, if you watched it, I did, you never felt the Rams were threatened. And Arizona, meanwhile, is a Hail Mary pass away from a five-game losing streak. I want to talk Kyler. My feeling was when I watched him early is, what a baseball player. What a beautiful throw. He can win from the pocket. But increasingly, when you take the run out due to an injury, he can't. He's a little inconsistent. Having coached quarterbacks forever, can we take him to a different level as a thrower, or is the reality with Kyler? He's got to run a little bit, and maybe a lot, a bit, to win.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's not a criticism. It's the same reason I don't criticize Lamar Jackson, because he has to run a little bit. These great athletes, it's how they've grown up playing the game. Their identities wrapped up in running the ball as much as just throwing the ball. We go to these camps over the country, and they'll give you their rushing stats the same time they give you their passing stats. It's who they think they are. And I think Kyler, a lot of what gives him juice is when he's dominating in the run game, when he is creating in the passing game. I think for the Cardinals, and this is easier said than done, especially for a coach just lost a game, didn't call his best game, you got to be very intentional with the plays you call. You can't fall into a rhythm of calling every traditional play when you have a playmaker like that. You got to make sure you're constantly tapping in to his persona and calling plays so he can be magical, calling plays so he can be involved in the run game, calling unique plays to keep the defense off balance. You also be very intentional about creating a run threat with your tailback so the defense starts sucking in on the runner so that your quarterback can be a runner. I think Kingsbury has a challenge each week how he calls the game, because he has to call it to Kyler's skill set,
yeah,
and make sure that he's giving him the juice all the time.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, so you lose a big game. It's not the end of the world. Let me talk you off the cliff a little bit. So now, how much off season do you get? Like, you get a couple weeks here. What do you do? What do you do with your life now?
We're back to work, doing season reviews and scheme reviews and coaches meetings. But I will give myself a chance. We'll get out to our place in Tahoe soon, and I'll get a little bit of a breather over Christmas with my family, and then be right back out to work.
Yeah, I called your AD. I recommended you not be fired yet. A couple more games. We'll see where it goes.
It's tough, man. The skies are gray. The food doesn't taste very good after you lose. It's rough.
I get it. Good seeing you, bud.
Thanks, brother.
Casper Sleep, 1,000 to 1,500 performing cooling systems when you sleep. Perforations, a cooling system, Casper.com. The code is heard, 10% off. Cozy bedrooms in the cold time of the year. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, the Rams are back in control of the NFC West.
Yes.
With a 38-28 win over the Cardinals.
Mostly played really well.
Discussing. Yeah. Yes. Jared Goff took better care of the football.
He did.
No turnovers for the first time since week 7.
Yeah. It's amazing. Wait, when you really, I mean, it's funny about football. You'd be like, because he obviously had a horrible turnover game, and all week they probably worked on ball security. And then what do you know? Like Baker Mayfield, by the way, and Daniel Jones were turnover machines. Sometimes you just have to remind players.
Take care of the ball.
And you think to yourself, well, it's obvious, take care of the ball. But it's amazing what coaching can do. So Goff yesterday, you could see the way he held the ball. Ball security was great.
Well, also, I mean, we talk about this all the time. Now, obviously, not all turnovers are created equal. Like, right. you do want to air it out a little bit. You don't want to play conservative just because right. you're terrified of turning the ball over. But you also can't have 4 turnover games. Like, that's absurd. Like, you're not going to win that way.
Yeah.
No defense is that good. You put your defense in a terrible position, and you're losing possessions. Like, you need those. The NFL is very competitive. It's the best in the world. On the other side, Kyler Murray struggled in the first half. He completed 3 of 12 passes for 73 yards. He was also held to 15 total rushing yards, which tied his season low. You and Trent were just discussing this. Like, this is a part of his game to be able to run, and sometimes you just need to lean into it.
By the way, Kyle Shanahan has had Sean McVay's number. McVay's had the Arizona Cardinals number. This is one of the – we said this Friday. The Niners are a bad matchup for the Rams on the OD line. This is not a great matchup because, first of all, the secondary for the Rams just keeps getting better every year. Aaron Donald creates pressure they can't overcome. The Rams just, the personnel match, plus Jalen Ramsey, you can put him on D-Hop. The Rams match up better with this team than any team in their division. By the way, Arizona last several years has matched up well with San Francisco because Kyler could get away from their rush. So this division is just a matchup. It's weird how a fourth place team matches up often great with a first place team.
The Rams also improved to 33-0 under McVay when they're leading at halftime.
That's an amazing number.
And to your point, the Rams are undefeated against the Cardinals under McVay.
Yeah.
7-0.
7-0 now?
Yeah. Yes. So the Rams now hold the tiebreaker over the Seahawks for first place in the NFC West at 8-4. Seahawks are also 8-4, but as I mentioned, they have the Rams have the tiebreaker. Then the Cardinals at 6-6 and the 49ers at 5-6.
And I'll tell you.
Tonight.
The 49ers, Joy, they're all healthy now outside of their tight end. So they got their running backs and their wide receivers healthy, and Richard Sherman is back. So
I don't know what to make of
so
the
if the
49ers.
If the Niners win tonight, this is their season tonight.
Yes.
So this is the season for the Saints. That's why I picked them tonight. Buffalo is in. They'll make the playoffs. They do too many things well. But this is the season for the Niners tonight, and the last time we said that, it was against the Rams, and they won. So I like the Niners tonight, even though they've been displaced and are practicing on a high school field in Arizona.
Interesting team. Yes, like what they've had to overcome this year to still be in the playoff discussion, it's similar to Tomlin last year. It's really impressive. All the injuries, not having the quarterback, and to still be, you know, still be in the playoff conversation right now is really remarkable. So the Dolphins improved to 8-4 with a 19-7 win over the Bengals, but...
Let's talk about that.
This was not an enjoyable game for me as a Dolphins fan. The story was
bad.
It was brutal. It was the fighting that led to 5 ejections between the two teams. And it's pretty difficult to get ejected in an NFL game. Like, you have to do something very deliberate and obvious. Everyone knows what you have to do to get ejected in an NFL game. It's not college where you accidentally get a guy running full speed in the wrong way and you're ejected from the game, which, by the way, is the worst rule in sports. It is infuriating.
There is an ejection in college. There was one this weekend, an ejection in college football for a... If it looks like it hurt too much, you're out of here. College football's ejection rule is terrible.
It's awful. And like, I know we're completely sidebarring here, but like, I get that they're trying to protect...
Totally get it.
...the kids. But can we get a warning? Can we get a warning first? That feels appropriate, right? Like a warning since you're running full speed. It's the worst rule. The worst rule. So the worst fight or the worst came that came out of the fight which broke out with a big penalty from a dirty hit on the Dolphins punt returner.
Yeah.
Brian Flores got involved in the brawl, and he spoke after the game about why he got so heated.
I've got to do a better job of keeping up my poise. You know, but look, I'm going to stick up for my players. They're going to stick up for each other, you know, without getting penalties, without, you know, hurting the team. But we got to do a better job keeping our poise, you know, as a team. Look, these are like my kids. So the people in this organization, they're very important to me. I'm going to try to protect, you know, everyone here.
Ryan Flores wanted all the smoke.
He was not in a good mood.
No. And listen, I like this. For this particular game, I don't think that this is going to be a habit or anything. You don't want to lose control, like he said. Like, you want to keep your composure. This game was completely out of control. It was hideous. Penalties all over the place. Dolphins had 8 penalties for 54 yards. Bengals had 6 penalties for 62 yards.
Listen, the league does a really good, considering there's a regulated level of violence in this sport.
Yes.
I'm always shocked more of this doesn't happen. We get about one of these a year. They almost always include the Bengals. I'm not blaming anybody.
Well.
But... It's amazing that this is a game of intimidation, and the fact that we don't have more of these is kind of remarkable. It just went sideways really fast.
It did. I will say, though, the refs in the NFL do a really good job of letting a little bit of animosity be released before they start throwing penalties.
Yes, they
like
do.
They let it go for a little bit. Separate everyone, let everyone say what they need to say. If things start to get out of hand, then they'll throw a penalty. But the refs do a good job of like, look, there's a lot of violence and emotion going on here. Like, don't be so quick to just throw a penalty because guys are fighting.
Hey, listen, half your coaches played football, 75% played football. So the bottom line is they have that instinctive...
Yeah, like it's go time.
Let's go time.
We
all
get
that
it.
Smoke time.
Yeah, but the Dolphins should have played a better game overall. They converted 1/3 down the entire game. It was an ugly game for them. Finally, great fight this weekend. Earl Spence Jr. proved he's the same fighter he was before the accident nearly 14 months ago. He retained his welterweight title belt with a unanimous decision over Danny Garcia. The win kept Spence's undefeated career intact, 27-0 record. Garcia falls to 36-3 with the loss. It was a great fight. I felt like Garcia was always in it, but he was nowhere near as aggressive as he needed to be if he was going to win over the judges against Earl Spence Jr. I mean, Earl has the ability to create this kind of this feel that he's throwing so many more punches than he actually is. Like, if you look at the punch count at the end of the fight, like, they were pretty equal, but it did not feel that way. Garcia is a great counter puncher, but you can't do that in a fight like this. So you have to go after him. He just wasn't aggressive enough and was just really outmatched. But
you're our boxing reporter.
Am I?
I do love
boxing.
Oh no, it's an event. You're a Miami girl. Miami's an event town. I'm a Vegas guy. Vegas is an event town. We used to have daredevils.
Well, there's just nothing like fight night. There just isn't. Like, it's really, if you're a sports fan,
the best.
It should be a bucket list thing to do.
And the only thing my wife doesn't like sport. Only thing she likes once a year. Let's go to a fight. UFC boxing. Let's go to a fight.
You're gonna enjoy it. It's one of those places where nothing can lie either. Like, if the momentum in the fight changes, you feel it.
Yes.
In the whole arena, everyone stands up when something big happens. It's a really fun night. But this was overall a really great fight. So it was good for the fans, and it could lead to a potential fight with Terrence Crawford next. He was at the fight, but he fought Kell Brook, beat him in TKO in the fourth round in November 14th. So everyone's kind of looking for this to be the next fight. Bob Arum said that Spence and Manny Pacquiao are the only options for Crawford's next fight. So we'll see.
Good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line.
Mike Vick's around the corner.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
He played for 13 years, Pro Bowler for 4, drafted number 1 overall, and he had the great opportunity, did Michael Vick, to play with a Mike Tomlin, going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, play with an Andy Reid, where you know you got a coaching edge, and Mike now is joining us live. So go back to I'm watching Belichick yesterday against the entire Charger staff, and I'm like, this is a pro staff and a college staff. When you were with Andy or Mike, did you ever really believe, Mike, going into a game or during it, oh yeah, our coaching staff is we're not just winning, our coaching staff is dominating another coaching staff?
Yeah, I think a majority of my career with Andy, I always felt that way. I felt like he always had the answers. And you know, when your coach feels that way and he exuberates that confidence, you can feel it throughout the week. Like, and with us in Philly, it started on Wednesday. Like, come Wednesday, by 5 o'clock, I knew exactly what needed to be done. I was on the same page with Andy. I understood the game plan. I felt good about it. And it was because he made me feel good about it. And he helped me understand everything that needed to happen. And that's what great coaches do. Mike Tomlin as well, on the defensive side of the ball. You know, I think he's one of the greatest because the way he prepared and have his guys prepared, they can answer any question come game time, you know, before the game starts on Sunday or Monday. And it just makes everybody's job easier. And, you know, coaching really matters, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah, there's no question that football is the sport where in the NBA, it's about the individual star. Baseball, it's analytics. Football is still a coaching sport. So Baker Mayfield yesterday, did it change? He finally beat a really good team on the road. He was very good. Does it change the way you look at Baker today?
It shows me that Baker has it in him. And I think for Baker, it comes a point in time where, you know, you look around the locker room, you look around in practice, and you look at the game film, and you say, okay, we're good on defense. We have great receivers. We can run the football. If I just do my job and you simplify it in doing your job, then I make the team that much better.
Right.
And I think that's what Baker is starting to realize. If I just do my job, I don't have to do everybody's job. You can only control what you can control. It makes you that much better. And for him, it's just staying within the framework of the system, of the offense, and running it efficiently and letting guys do their job. And it looked like that's what they did yesterday and for the past couple of weeks. And his job is starting to look easier and easier. So, you know, as Baker Mayfield continues to show us, you know, that he has a good grip on things around him, you know, the better I feel about his situation. But he's still a work in progress.
You interviewed Kyler Murray this week. Michael and I are on Fox NFL Kickoff every Sunday morning, have been for years. And you interviewed Kyler. He's one Hail Mary pass away from being on a 5-game losing streak. He's not running as much. Yeah. Therefore, it's more pocket, and he's struggling. You've been there. You've been a guy that runs. Do you kind of feel his pain? Where is he at right now, and where are you at with Kyler Murray this morning?
You know, I think you know, to his credit, man, a shoulder injury, AC joint injury, it's probably one of the worst injuries to have. And, you know, I've been able to play hurt, you know, throughout my career on numerous occasions. But the shoulder, you know, in 2002, it was a different injury. It bothers you at night. You know, bothers you when you wake up in the morning. It takes a while to get going. And the last thing you want is to get hit on it. Then you got to go to practice and you got to continue to throw. And it just never gets better. So, you know, mentally in your mind, you know, you lose your arm strength. You know, you lose everything that exuberates the confidence that you should have in playing the quarterback position. And it's been a big drop off. You know, on top of that, teams are paying attention to what he does best and taking that away.
Yeah.
It's evident. It's a copycat league. You know, coaches are watching and, you know, it's only going to get harder. It's not going to get any easier. So, you know, when the going gets tough, you got to get going, man. You got to figure out a way to make sure that, you know, you do your job accordingly. And that's where Kyle is at right now.
So Carson Wentz may get benched for Jalen Hurts. It's a tough decision because you just think, well, Jalen played better. But yeah. Now you're dealing with the star quarterback and what's in his head. If you were Doug Peterson, because Jalen Hurts did offer a spark. I mean, he wasn't great, but he offered a spark. There's no, we can't debate that. Would you replace Carson Wentz and just say, I got to see what I got here. This is a mess. What would you do?
You know, if I was Doug, I'd take a couple of days to just think about the decision and probably make this decision on Wednesday morning based on what he's seen on film. Obviously, you can't go away from Carson. Contractually, you're tied up right there. But Jalen does provide a spark, and you did draft him in the second round, which means you've seen some in him. Now, whether you just drafted this guy to put a little pressure indirectly on Carson Wentz, that's their business. But if that's the case, then this is the time to put him out there because the team need a spark, not just the offense, the defense too. You know, at some point, you can eventually lose the locker room. So even if, you know, like Mike Tomlin quarter, if you get a little JV-ish, you play Carson in the first half and then you play Jaden in the second half, depending on how things are going. And that's just what it is. But give this team a spark. Give them a chance. You know, they still, you know, human beings with emotions. Let them go out there and let it all hang out. Give them a reason to believe.
So I finally watched Drew Locke last night and I figured out who he is. He's Jay Cutler. Great arm. But he doesn't play with a ton of urgency. Little loose for my taste. Yeah. Just kind of roll. By the way,
little wiry.
Do you see a little bit of that?
I seen it. And I was evaluating Drew. And I liked the conditions last night on the road in Kansas City, a divisional opponent. And it's like, okay, Drew, show me what you're going to do. And he didn't show much. Like I said, a little wiry, a lot of errant throws. Didn't look comfortable. And I would love to watch this team a little more to see what type of system they're running and what they're doing. But it was balls flying all over the place. And this was a good test for him. He's in his second year. And just like we've been evaluating everybody in their second year, and we evaluate harder. You know, this is the time to show John Elway and this franchise that you are the guy. And I don't think he's shown that. So, you know, a little disappointed in Drew Locke last night. You know, we'll give him some more games, but it can't give him too much time.
Yeah, because their running game was pretty good, and Denver's defense kept the game close. So he got some breaks last night, and he didn't come through, and I think that's part of it. Michael Vick, Fox NFL kickoff on Sunday. I love having you on, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
You know, it is. So I was watching him last night, and I'm like, he's Jay Cutler, who drove me nuts. Is that they can move, but Jay Cutler had a great arm. And Drew's got an arm. He can really sling it. And this sounds weird, but like urgency. This drives me nuts in people in general. Like when we do a show on the show, be present and be urgent. We have a show, it's 3 hours, it's live. You got to be in the. I used to have a producer that would go for smokes, like during the show. Be like, dude, we're on the air, live. We can't go for smokes during the breaks. And it's like, Drew plays like Jay. Like I know he cares, kind of. Like with Brady, for all his faults, he plays with. Breeze is like this too. Breeze plays with incredible urgency. Every snap, Drew is totally into it. Russell Wilson plays with this. And it's hard to explain. Russell Wilson is completely in the moment and totally urgent. There's no off plays. Cutler and Drew are just kind of, it's AAU basketball, man. Just, I'll get it next time. Gonna sling this thing. It's like, right now, last in completion percentage in the league, last in passer rate, and this is not a Denver team lacking talent. Melvin Gordon's really good. He got a running game last night. Fant. Jerry Jeudy, the kid out of Penn State, like this, This is not a team lacking. This is not the Jets. Like, their O-line's not great, but they got a tight end. They got a back. He got defensive help last night. He just needs – I don't know if you can coach that up.
You want to feel like everyone is as frustrated as you are as a fan when you lose.
You never felt that with Jay Cutler.
No.
Jay would go home and, we lost. I want you to be pissed. It's got to drive you nuts. That's what I know.
Yeah, you have to be as mad as we are as fans.
Exactly. I demand that. starting in 2021, Discovery Plus, a new streaming service, U.S. only. Some of your favorite brands, plus exclusive originals, U.S. only. Discovery Plus, Hour 3 next.